Good afternoon and welcome aboard. Happy Friday the 13th to you on this beautiful Sacramento day. I hope you're having a great day and looking forward to a good weekend. Lots of things going on. And we're going to kind of drill through a bunch of them. We're going to kind of navigate federal policy that I think is very, very interesting regarding the president's executive order that I think represents some good policy. I like the idea. I actually appreciate it. And I'm glad it's being done. I'll talk about some of the fine points of that. Interestingly enough, there's also some, I thought, very, very, what I believe will be an effective ad against the general proposed tax cuts, tax restructuring that I think are effectively done to suggest it's a series of people that I would describe as working class, kind of blue collar folks that come across as likable and pleasant, and they are critical of the tax plan, the tax reduction plan, because they say it gives the best tax break to the people at the top of the economic pyramid. And if something's going to be fair and equitable across the board, yes, those people who are paying the most will very likely benefit the most from a reduction. But looking at the fine points of what's being proposed, and that's all it is at this juncture, it looks very much to me as though there's a benefit to potentially to everybody at every level of the economic spectrum. And if there's going to be a considerable tax reduction, a reduction in the burden imposed upon taxpayers, those people who make the most money, therefore pay the most in taxes, are going to see a significant improvement. That should come as a surprise to no rational thinking people, but to attack the emotional reaction, the emotional observations of the tax structure in general and the cost of taxation and the impact on people. There's so much involved in this that's I think very, very latent in terms of people don't readily grasp the concept of the extent to which they're being impacted by taxation. If you have your tax liability, your income tax liability withheld from your paycheck, you might be inclined to believe that that you don't have a big tax burden. But when you find yourself in a position where you actually have to take the action of seeing income that has come your way, you've got the dollars in your hand, in your bank account, money you can spend on things you want or things you think would be better for your future by way of investments, arranging for things to improve the life of your family, whatever the case may be, and now all of a sudden a big portion of what you have amassed by way of wealth has to go to somebody else. And the only thing that you did to be penalized effectively is earn money. So the whole concept is, to my way of thinking, so incredibly convoluted and contrary to common sense. We impose adverse consequences on people when they engage in conduct that doesn't serve the greater good or may risk safety. If you speed in your automobile, or if you run a traffic signal, you're going to get a fine. The idea is to inconvenience you, to create a negative incentive to encourage you to comply with the law and not put other people at risk. You've done something inappropriate, therefore you're penalized for it. But when you look at income tax in particular, it's a charge that you're faced with because you have earned money. And we want people to earn more money. So I think by reducing the burden, especially on those high-income earners, it increases the likelihood that more dollars will be circulated into the economy and everybody. The old John Kennedy philosophy that a rising tide lifts all boats, I think, plays out. And if you tap the emotional component, and that's what it looks as though the DNC has put forth this ad that I think will probably have some impact. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. The other thing is the healthcare executive order. And I believe that the president's executive order should actually create and will likely create more choices. It allows competition across state lines, which I think is it makes all the sense in the world. Shop for the best deal you can get. And I think it will change the price that people across the full spectrum pay for insurance. I'll tell you, years back, before Southwest Airlines came into prominence, I was find myself in a position where I had to make a lot of flights from Sacramento to Southern California. Back when PSA, Pacific Southwest Airlines, was the big carrier for that. And the price of that trip was extraordinary. It was extremely expensive. And my suspicion was because so many people that were doing that were members of the legislature or other people involved in government enterprise. So the bill would be paid by somebody else, and it was just built into public sector budgets. And therefore, the competitive component to free market system was not allowed to be reflected in the costs. Southwest comes along, and they have these very, 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 very cheap fares. And guess what? All of a sudden, everybody's rates came down. So I think as you look at the insurance industry and as you see competition brought into the equation and the need for insurance providers, people who sell policies, to be realistic with regard to their competitive approach toward doing business, the likelihood is that will drive prices down. And I don't know why. I've never had this question answered to my satisfaction. But again, to compare it to automobile insurance, if you have people who have amassed a significant number of traffic collisions and claims, or even just violations that records their driving conduct, that serves as a legitimate predictor of likelihood of risk in the future, they go into what's known as an assigned risk pool. And if you're going to be licensed to sell automobile insurance in California, you have to assume a certain portion of your clientele, a certain amount of your business has to be for assigned risk. And they do pay more than other consumers do. But there's a kind of a smoothing that comes out of it because there's a large pool of them, and it's a requirement. If you're going to be licensed to do that business in the state, you've got to carry some assumed risk clientele. Why could that same thing not be done with people that suffer from pre-existing medical conditions? Because there is a foreseeability with regard to what it's going to cost to treat them if they bring certain disease and medical history to the equation. So I think there's an element of fairness involved there, and you spread the impact to be absorbed based upon people who choose to be licensed to sell medical insurance in the state of California, and now with the ability to go across state lines, I think there's hope. I think this is probably the first real hope that I've seen on the horizon as it relates to healthcare insurance more accurately. So I like the idea. In other news, there's a political contest heating up, and the long-serving senior senator from California, Dianne Feinstein, has a challenger from within. And we'll take a look at some of the fine points of that after we take care of some other business real quickly. You got thoughts? You want to jump in the conversation? 916-921-1530, 800-834-1530. More conversation coming up right after this.
First, for breaking news, 24-7. Depend on it. News Radio KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KFBK. This is interesting political warfare, I guess you'd have to say. The Senate President Pro Tem, that would be one Kevin Leon, also known as Kevin DeLeon, who represents Los Angeles in the State Senate and is seen as a leading Latino voice in Democratic politics, is now signaling that he is likely to campaign aggressively against Donald Trump in the future. And he also is looking at his options. And it looks very much at this juncture as though he has the intention of running against the senior senator from California, Dianne Feinstein, who is no young person. I think she's 84 years of age, if I'm not mistaken. And she's an institution. She's been around a long, 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 long time. She was thrust into the role as mayor of San Francisco and has been a very, very prominent political player in the Golden State. It looks as though what signaled the Senate President Pro Tem to jump into this was when Dianne Feinstein had the audacity to make a statement late this summer, back in August, when she said that Trump could be a good president and that he, quote, can learn and change. As she later clarified after she came under fire, and I quote, under no illusion is that likely to happen, and we'll continue to oppose his politics. That was her That was her statement after she got major pushback. And there is some inside political business relationship. Senator Feinstein's husband is a contractor, very, very, very wealthy people, which I think is just A-okay fine. I don't begrudge that in the slightest. Oh, it's interesting the people that she seeks to represent seem to have a problem with that. Nonetheless, very, very wealthy family, extraordinarily wealthy. And she, but right before she had kind things to say about the president, relatively kind, the administration did infer upon the senator's husband and his business enterprise $625 or $650 million for construction project for high-speed rail to essentially set the foundation for high-speed rail to become a reality, increasing the likelihood of that. So the swamp life clearly lives on there, and it seems as though it it probably got a little something for the president. And she also is the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, which has some significant horsepower in an area in which everybody in Washington has concerns. And she, over the years, I think, has been a relatively easy person to work with. And certainly she was reasonable on public safety issues in terms of funding and supporting the overall cause. She was very, very supportive of the local police in San Francisco when she was mayor. In fact, I have a friend that was actually assigned to her from the PD as her driver and bodyguard when she was mayor, and maintains a good relationship with her to this day. so, Mr. The President, Senate President Pro Tem, I refuse to call him De Leon because, his, the best of my knowledge, his legal name is still Leon. But he has indicated that he will likely enter the race after a state legislative session in which California lawmakers have gained his big victory, and that is pushing legislation targeted at the president, making California a sanctuary state. So I think as things go on, it's very likely that some of the some evidence of the bad idea that sanctuary statehood is will come to fruition. The public may be starting to learn about the consequences of not getting federal grants coming to the Golden State, because there will be clear, absolutely unequivocal, clearly spelled out conditions precedent to the acceptance of any grant that you will comply with all federal law, to include explicitly immigration law. You can absolutely take that to the bank. It will be written into the language of the grant. And by the way, this is not without precedent. If you think back to the days of the 55 mile an hour speed limit, when nobody was complying with it and it was getting old, and the true value in terms of saving gas to come from that was in question, and the states wanted to increase their speed limits back up to something that they believed to be more reasonable, National Highway Traffic funding was held back to any state who had the audacity to break that, to break away from the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. So there's a history, and ultimately the federal restrictions went away. National Highway funding money came back to the states, and they were able to make a different decision and go in a different direction. But you may rest assured, as the Justice Department oversees, actually writes the language for grants for state for law enforcement programs in the state of California, and I strongly suspect education grants in the state of California, that the conditions will be clearly spelled out, and the money will either not be awarded to the state or the municipalities and counties therein, or it will be called back if they fail to comply. So my question for you is, this is my poll question today, if it came down to a vote between Kevin Leon, Kevin, also known as Kevin De Leon, and Dianne Feinstein in the general election, which is a possibility, for whom would you cast your ballot? You got thoughts? 916-921-1530, 800-834-1530. More conversation coming up after this. Don't go away.
We're keeping an eye on the Northern California wildfires all weekend long here at KFBK, and we'll continue our team coverage Monday on the KFBK Morning News with Amy Lewis and me, Dan Mitchinson.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KFBK, talking politics here, and an interesting intra-party slugfest, as it looks as though the Senate President Pro Tem Kevin Leon, also known as Kevin DeLeon, will challenge Senator Dianne Feinstein. It also looks as though he's not likely to be the only challenger. Tom Steyer, the billionaire environmentalist and single largest Democratic donor, has quoted as saying that he is very much looking at the Senate race next year. Steyer, who is in Washington this week, as a matter of fact, issued a letter Wednesday challenging Democratic candidates to call for Trump's impeachment. This is all very interesting because just like there's a group of people that are of conservatives who are trying to recall Governor Brown right now, and I have plenty of bones to pick with the governor and think that the conduct in which he's engaged, especially recently, is just, to my way of thinking, unfathomable. It makes no sense to me, some of the things that have come out of the legislature that he has historically resisted, and now he's fast and furious signing into law. I have even suspicions that the firestorms may be providing cover because it's not going to get the attention it otherwise would have gotten for some of the bills he has signed into law that we've talked about a little bit on this program. We'll get to more of them as well. But it's shocking to me that he's engaged in that kind of public policy because over the years, he's had his bizarre thoughts, thus the Moonbeam moniker. But every now and then you'd see evidence that he was grounded and could make a good decision. That seems to be completely gone. But recalling this guy with who has violated no law that I can see, he's been democratically, small d, democratically elected to serve as the chief executive of the state's government. And he's effectively, largely done what he said he was going to do. There's some dishonesty there. You can't sugarcoat it. He said he wasn't going to raise taxes without a vote of the public, and he did. He's also, I think, grossly disingenuous in some of his explanations as to why he has signed certain bills into law. But in terms of a crime that can be cited as grounds for impeachment, I don't see it. And by the way, if he was to be impeached with, 14 months left in his term, 15 months? What would that give us? That would give us Governor Newsom. So the wisdom associated with that, I think, is absurd. And I see the same thing with Tom Steyer and others who want to impeach the president. There's some things about the president's behavior that make me cringe. I can't stand it. But he was duly elected, given the system that we have, the Electoral College. It was a fair contest, a fair win. And I do believe, while his conduct and interpersonal behavior is not good, I don't like it one bit, there's nothing there that rises to grounds for impeachment. And by the way, I believe he's working towards implementation of his agenda, which the American people seem to appreciate, not in the state of California, not in Illinois, not in New York or Massachusetts or some other states, but across the board, it seems as though it's appreciated. There's nearly $6 trillion in the stock market alone since the day he was elected. It's grown by that level. And, of course, there was some trajectory of growth before that, but it's taken off at a higher pace. There are some good things, reducing regulations, the appointment of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. A lot of good things have come out of it. So if there are things you don't like about him, you resolve that the next time you have an opportunity to vote for president. Same thing's true with the governor. in this particular case, though, it is Tom Steyer, who's calling for the impeachment of the president, which I think has a high risk of political backfire. He also is among those, again, as I say, giving serious thought to a run for the U.S. Senate himself. California Democratic strategist Dave Jacobson said that California's progressive and labor movement is salivating for new blood and fresh ideas in Washington. And he says the Senate's President Pro Tem is the embodiment of California resistance and the future of the Democratic Party. Interesting. I don't think that flies. I don't think it works because some of the things that have been undertaken in recent months, frankly, are problematic. The criticism of Senator Feinstein mostly comes from the left, Democratic candidates seeking to replace her will have to first win over the party's increasingly powerful progressive wing, which may be doable because there's no party primary in this state. Remember, it's the top two overall vote getters that will go to the general election. The June jungle primary, as it's called, the victors from there, the people with the two top seats, will advance to the general election. We saw that last cycle with Kamala Harris and Loretta Sanchez. So no matter their party affiliation, the race will be fought on two planes. Feinstein's figures, her plan is likely to win the backing of the party establishment and will almost surely advance past the June vote to the November election. I think that's incredibly likely. So her challenges will effectively be running their own mini race against each other for the chance to take her on head-to-head. Again, there is a roster of high-profile contenders, and they're likely to be more coming out in future weeks and months. We'll see where it goes. But you look at some of the things that the Senate president pro tem has done. He's way, 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 way far left. He is the architect of California sanctuary statehood, which I think is going to have some absolute backlash. He also passed a bill out of his chamber that will lay the groundwork for a single-payer health care plan in California that even the governor said that this simply is not affordable. It cannot happen. It won't work. Governor Brown, who's not exactly by no means considered to be conservative or by some way of thinking, not even reasonable, said, no, this can't work. The legislation, which is known as SB 562, was subsequently tabled by the Assembly Speaker, Mr. Rendon, which set off a fierce round of intra-party fights. So we'll see. I think it's interesting to watch it. And again, my question is for you, if it comes down to a contest between the senior senator from California, Dianne Feinstein, and the guy who tried to bring single-payer health care insurance to the state of California and did bring sanctuary statehood, for whom would you cast a ballot? And I know who I would vote for, and I never thought I'd hear myself say it, but yeah, I think I could see Senator Feinstein in a favorable light given that option. So it's interesting that it looks as though within this ultra blue state of California, there is a desire for new blood to come in and kind of do a little bit of what Donald Trump did when he challenged the establishment within the GOP. And they are trying to challenge the establishment, or they are challenging the establishment within the Democratic Party in California. Where it goes remains to be seen. More conversation coming up right after this. Don't go away.
Sacramento's news, traffic, and weather. News Radio KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KFBK. Got a note from Alan and Loomis who says that Kevin DeLeon, or Kevin Leon as I call him, because that's, by the way, his name, is all but driving my U-Haul to Idaho, leaving the area because of that. Now, remember that if he's in the U.S. Senate representing California, that's got an impact on the entire nation. By the way, that reminds me of something that took place yesterday, and I wanted to talk about it, but we just had too much going on. But looking for some good news, something to be happy about, Sheriff Devin Bell up in Placer County had the opportunity yesterday to do a couple of great things, something that every chief executive likes to do, swore in a significant number of new employees, promoted a significant number of people to new elevated positions, and recognized extraordinary performance and selfless dedication and valor on the part of his personnel in the Placer County Sheriff's Department. That was yesterday in Granite Bay at the Bayside Church, as a matter of fact. So that's good news. There's something, always something amidst all of this to be happy about. Now, I've been trying to get to this also, and you look at what happens, and this is kind of a familiar playbook grab for people in high-profile positions who get caught with their hand in the cookie jar. And that cookie jar can be a metaphor for any number of kinds of, human frailty, I suppose, by way of behavior. Harvey Weinstein now says that he's headed off for therapy because somehow he could not overcome the drive to molest and maybe rape and force himself upon women in a sexual way because he had power. He had something they wanted, and he could leverage them to get that. And so he's asserting some kind of sex addiction. Apparently, he said he's headed off to therapy. No specifics as to what it would be. But I found an interesting article that indicates, yeah, so quick, because psychiatrists have debated whether or not to include sex addiction as a diagnosis in the latest edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, also known as DSMV, and opted not to. Dr. Jay Lee, a clinical psychologist in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and the author of The Myth of Sex Addiction, says, I'm not sure when being a selfish, misogynistic jerk became a medical disorder. I tend to agree. This is a selfish concept that has been used to explain selfish, powerful, wealthy men engaging in reprehensible, irresponsible, impulsive sexual behavior for a long time, says Dr. Lee. I don't think it's limited to wealthy men, by the way. Just yesterday, Weinstein's younger brother, Bob, called Harvey class, quote, a world-class liar who has not yet actually sought therapy. He says, my brother Harvey is obviously a very, very sick man. I don't know if his behavior is sickening. I don't know that it's evidence of some kind of an illness. I'm not so sure. A healthy sex drive, I think, is just that. How you choose to implement that or act on it is the question. His brother Bob says, I've urged him to seek immediate professional help because he is in dire need of it. His remorse and apologies to the victims of his abuse are hollow. Well, I think that's true. So the question is, sex addiction, is there an addiction or an excuse? And now, of course, several actors, including Angelina Jolie, Gwyneth Paltrow, neither one of whom I could pick out of a lineup, by the way, as well as journalists, models, and other women involved in the film industry, have accused Weinstein of making unwanted sexual advances in some way. And some of them have even alleged rape, the big one, the ultimate in terms of improper sexual conduct, overt, abundantly prohibited criminal conduct. Look at this goes back, by the way, the data on this sex addiction or excuses for cheating. Goes back to Tiger Woods and his shocking cheating admissions and subsequent parade of alleged paramours has resulted in more than just unending fodder for the tabloids. This particular guy, who had a lot going for him, golf superstar, also gave comfort to spouses who have long suspected that kind of thing on a part of their significant others. What's so different here, again, understanding the weakness of human beings, I think is legitimate. But the mean, cruel, controlling, domineering, abusive treatment of non-willing partners, that's the distinction. I don't see that as a product or an example of an illness. I see that as a character flaw, as evil, as improper behavior. That's my final thought for the week. Hope you have an extraordinary weekend. I will be back with you on Monday. I'm looking forward to it. Have a great one.